You're wrong with Ian and Bobby. You're wrong.
Hey everyone, welcome to You're Wrong with Ian and Bobby. I'm Bobby, that's Ian. What's up, man?
Sorry, did we start?
I don't know.
What's up, man? How you doing?
Why did you do that to us?
I don't know.
You were in the clear.
Funny to me. Because I know Bobby told me right before we started that he didn't take notes this week, and I know he's feeling a little revealed, so I wanted to mess with him. Hey, Bobby, how are you?
If we were doing this in person still, that would be the point where I pulled out, like, a three-ring binder of notes, all tabulated. Like, I'll tell you what happens at minute 15 of GLOW.
What have you been up to the last couple weeks? We've taken a little while off.
Yeah.
It's been almost a month since we recorded last.
Yeah, it's weird. It hasn't been that long since I last saw you, but it's been a while since we did
right. This,
so.
Yeah. Yeah, it's, I think we started hanging out in person and just decided, fuck it, let's just hang out rather than do the podcast, so.
Yeah.
Yeah. What have I been up to? Well, I just got back last week. I've been on vacation for the last couple weeks, and I just finished my first week of teaching again. I have been going back to Rick and Morty, watching a bunch of old Rick and Morty again. That's been fun. What else? Bobby, goddammit, say something. Start off the show. You're the one. This is your fault. We're going off the rails already.
This, as has been a consistent thing for the past year and a half, but especially this last week, it's been like a really terrible week for the state of politics in the United States. And
yes.
So I didn't realize I've been doing this like almost exclusively as far as like what books I'm consuming, but I've just been reading memoirs by former Obama aides and Obama staffers. And so I read a couple of those and they're pretty good. I read Who Thought This Was a Good Idea by Alyssa Mastromonaco, and I'm reading The World as It Is by Ben Rhodes. And Obama seemed like a good dude, you know, even if you don't agree with his policies or whatever. I miss having, like, a human being in charge of the country, you know?
Did you practice saying that one woman's last name before the show started?
Alyssa Mastromonaco?
Mastromonaco is a little difficult.
How is that difficult?
Okay, listeners, voice your, if you think you know how to spell Mastromonaco off of the top of your head right now,
I am gonna guess,
write in and let us know.
I'm going to guess there are only two potential ways that people would spell it.
You're really going to go toe-to-toe with me on this, that Mastromonico is a complicated sounding name.
It's a name that you would look at, and there's so many letters you'd freeze, and then if you just sounded it out, you'd be like,
yeah,
Mastromonico.
Yeah, for a second, it sounds difficult. You could not even concede that point. Look at me. I'm Bobby. I brag about all the smart people books I read, and when somebody mentions a name is long, I ridicule their intellect.
You know,
that's me.
I'm sorry
I'm Bobby.
That I don't have a last name that no one has never mispronounced, you know? A monosyllabic.
Oh.
Wow.
Ooh, this is painful. No. Keep going.
Oh, man.
No, you were being so righteous, and you were winning. You were totally winning, Bobby.
Yeah. Monosyllabic is harder to say than Mastromonico.
I want to say that in our entire friendship, I've probably only beaten Bobby at gaslighting twice ever. And yesterday, he mentioned Rebecca House, who he's in love with, while we were texting each other, and I made it seem like I did not care for her work, and it really only took about 24 hours for you to finally just sadly say, are you kidding? I can't tell if you're kidding, and it was a really glorious moment for me. It happened about 10 minutes before the show started, because obviously Rebecca House is amazing, but
well,
I got to...
I doubled down for about 24 hours and like
gaslighted
you back to the point where I think we both lost touch on reality. Like neither of us knew what
totally.
The bit was anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been playing a lot of Vector Man recently. No, I haven't. I have nowhere to go with that.
This podcast is trash. This is pure trash right now. I apologize to everyone who's listening. Okay, so
what have I been up to these last couple of weeks? All of your friends.
Yeah, that's true.
It's a nightmare.
That's
it's
true.
A goddamn
the last
nightmare.
Last time we Last time I was, while I was home, it was my birthday, and a bunch of people came over, and Bobby became aware very quickly that almost everyone there listened to the show, and I think you were probably 75% upset at that, and then 25%, like, I could tell your reaction was like, well, none of my friends listened to the show, what the fuck?
Oh, it's very flattering. I appreciate that people listen to it, but also it just made me intensely uncomfortable right away.
You did. Your shoulders went up to your ears almost immediately, I think.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. Yeah. What have you been? So you've been reading a lot. What else have you been up to?
I watched a romantic comedy last night on Netflix called Set It Up.
No, you did Starring... not. Did you really watch that?
Yeah. Well, okay. I watched like 3/4 of it and then I fell asleep. But
yeah, I'm kind of ecstatic right now because it looks, if you're not familiar, Set It Up has a poster and premise that looks like it's a movie from like 1990 starring like Matthew Perry and Selma Hayek. Like that's kind of the like basic feel of the movie. It feels like, you know what it feels like? It feels like that Nine Lives movie with the cat that was voiced by Kevin Spacey that came out a couple of years ago. Like, it just feels like it's 15 years too late. But how was it?
It's good. I'm being totally serious. It's pretty good.
Okay. Now I'm no longer interested in this conversation.
So, looking right now, I mean, okay, I've wrestled with using Rotten Tomatoes as any sort of evidence because Rotten Tomatoes is dumb. But it's got 94% okay on Rotten Tomatoes. Which doesn't surprise me. The two leads, Zoe Dutch and Glenn Powell, are intensely likable. But
are they already established people? Because I had never seen them before. And the fact that they're paired with who is it? Who are the two secondary
Lucy
leads?
Lucy Liu and Taye Diggs.
Yeah. So that's what I was gonna say. I wasn't sure if I was right though. And so like the fact that they're so recognizable next to these two like anonymous white people that are clearly the stars in the movie just also made me laugh really hard that it's these two like way more famous people of color playing their personal assistants.
Zoe Dutch has been in a couple of things that I know her from, like a couple of things, but she's also Leah Thompson's daughter.
Okay, if you say Riverdale at any point during this conversation, I'm going to drive down to Southern California and strangle you.
If only
continue. Yeah,
I wish, because she's great. She'd be great on Riverdale. No, there's something. This is going to sound insane, but there's something that feels very unique and fresh about those two roles in that movie. And it's that they're both very funny and very quippy, but neither of them is particularly awkward or incompetent. They're just like doing a lot of like really fun, rapid fire, comedic timing dialogue back at each other. And it's really fun to watch. And Lucy Liu and Taye Diggs are great, as usual. But, yeah.
I'm upset right now. I just want to put that out.
It's good.
I had
so much fun watching it, and I'm going to finish it later. I started it at, like, 11 at night, so I fell asleep. But it's really good. I liked it. Maybe I'll pick it. Who knows?
No, I refuse. I think we get one veto a year, and that would be mine.
I'm writing this down. As soon as I run out of stuff, we're doing Set It Up.
God damn it, go fuck yourself. I watched a bunch of Silicon Valley while I was home. That show was very good. I know I'm like 5 years behind on this, but I've never really watched Silicon Valley past the first season.
Silicon Valley is one of my favorite shows. I love it.
Yeah.
I think two people are an absolute revelation in that show. One of them obviously is Thomas Middleditch, and the other one is Zach Woods. Zach Woods is incredible in that show.
Yeah, Zach Woods is incredible in that show. Yeah, for sure. He's like a breakout from that. The other thing I've been doing is something I want to pick eventually that I believe you borrowed from me for a couple of years and then finally gave back without reading, which is the Gotham Central comic books.
Oh, I've watched the Gotham TV show. I think it's basically the same thing.
God damn it, I hate you so much. I hate you so much.
Is that comic just a lot of people standing around waiting for Batman to show up?
Have you actually watched Gotham?
No.
Ever?
I watched the first couple of episodes, and I got really tired of how much that show wanted you to understand that it took place in the Batman universe.
Yes. There is a, I remember there is an, I think I watched the first four or five before I gave up, and there's an episode three or four in where there is a vigilante in town who is killing people who calls himself Balloon Man or something like that, and he keeps attaching self-inflating balloons to bad guys' legs and then inflating them, and they fly off into the sky. And there's
that sounds incredible.
The whole episode is about like vigilantes and where Gordon's stance is on vigilantes. And at the end, there's this like very, very, very slow, silly, high stakes moment where I think Bullock has a balloon attached to his leg because the vigilante thinks that Bullock is guilty of something, and Gordon has to decide whether he wants to shoot him down or not. But he's flying up at like a foot a minute and just screaming at Gordon. It's
oh my god, I want to watch it so bad.
It's pretty painful. And that was, I think, the moment where I decided to stop watching Gotham. For the record, Bobby knows and is kidding that Gotham Central is a very good comic with a good pedigree behind it, and it is nothing like Gotham, even though he has not read them.
I want to talk about Gotham more. There's there's two moments in the pilot that really, really turned me off of the show, and it was one of them was the very beginning of the pilot of the show called Gotham, the idea of which is the city of Gotham without Batman or before Batman. And right. The show,
it's also before Bruce Wayne is in it, but he's training. But like he already like instead he just kind of comes off like Damien from The Omen. Like he's just terrifying.
Well, the show,
it's a very strange choice.
Opens with like you figure you want the first shot of your show to be a statement about what kind of a show it's going to be.
Sure.
And the show opens with like baby Selina Kyle jumping from rooftop to rooftop, and then it pans yes. down to the Waynes getting murdered. And it's just like, it's like telling everyone, buckle in, you're in for a ride, you know? And yeah. then not 10 minutes later, we're meeting Edward Nygma for the first time.
Yes.
Who is not the Riddler at this point, but he can only speak in riddles. And then Bullock goes like, you and your riddles, Edward Nygma. And I'm like, oh my god, I cannot do this.
There is a, one of my favorite kind of stories to follow in recent news has been they've been grooming this character on the show to be the Joker for like 3 years, and he's very obviously supposed to be the Joker, but it's they have all these rules like they had on Smallville back in the day where like he can't have green hair, he can't call himself the Joker, he can't do this, he can't do that, and they finally just recently DC was like, yeah, just kidding, you can't make him the Joker. And so they've built up to him being the Joker for like 3 years, and now they have to either just kill him or come up with a different name for him that is outside of continuity. And he's going around in interviews saying how pissed off he is and how Jared Leto's a jackass.
Well, how? Why would DC have any problem putting the Joker in one more goddamn thing, right?
There's, did you, never watched Smallville, did you?
No.
There's, in season four, there's this very, very strange thing that happens where Ian Somerhalder moves to Smallville. He becomes a character on Smallville, and he is this really brooding rich kid whose parents both died. And you find out very quickly he's going by an alias. That's not his real name. And he's being followed around by this like old British guy the whole time. And then at the end of the season, he like starts taking these weird drugs and goes crazy and tries to kill a bunch of people. And I read that they were like very much trying to make him Bruce Wayne the whole time, and then DC pulled the cord at the last second, and they had to like make him into a villain to fix it.
Well, I almost understand that because they want to do like they want to control Bruce
sure.
Wayne.
I get it. It's just figure it out before the season starts.
But also, DC is putting Joker in everything. You know, like they're doing like two Joker movies right now. Why the hell would they care if the Joker is in Gotham, a show that no one watches? You know.
Yes, agreed.
They could even have like a different Joker in their other DC shows, and I don't think anyone would care, you know?
I like Luke Cage, unlike you. I think you would probably say you're lukewarm on Luke Cage. But I do from time to time watch that show and think like, oh, it sucks that we'll never get MCU Luke Cage. Like that, because they're not, it's not like they're gonna put Michael Coulter in like an Avengers movie, and like if they do, they've played down his powers enough for the budget so they can handle it in the budget of Cage that it's not going to make sense in a Marvel movie. So like that kind of stuff bums me out. I get all that.
You know what? Absolutely. But... Well, but also there's a continuity between the Marvel stuff that doesn't exist in the DC stuff.
Yeah, that's true. You're right.
But
you're
also,
right.
I could absolutely see Kevin Feige going like, I want to do a Luke Cage movie, and then like screwing over the TV people and just reintroducing Luke Cage as a different actor, you know?
I absolutely could see that. I'd actually be kind of fine with that. I mean, I don't know. That's really tricky. There was talks for a while that Charlie Cox was going to show up in Avengers, and that seemed to have died off, so.
Yeah, well, that was before, like, the creative committee died and Ike Perlmutter, like, got booted from the movie stuff, right?
This has been Marvel Talk with two guys who kind of read BuzzFeed sometimes.
You know what's a bummer is, it's like with the TV stuff, every time they announce a show that sounds kind of cool, you're like, oh, cool. Well, I guess that's never going to happen in the movies now.
Yeah. You know, like, that's, I feel that way about, well, I feel that way about Inhumans, which is not a series I care about that much. But I mean, the second that they decided to make it a TV show instead of a movie, I remember thinking, "Oh, well, this is just going to be bad then," because there's like you need special effects to be able to do that series. You
that
just
series
do.
Had special effects.
Yeah. Okay. You know what I mean.
My greatest regret is, like, I had the opportunity to watch the Inhumans in IMAX, which is a bold thing to do to premiere your TV show with special events.
Which then was very, very famously, not very good.
And I wish I had done it, because that would have been the way to watch it, is, like, as a preview in IMAX before the show came out.
I would have loved it so bad if I could, just so I could keep reminding you that you saw that movie in IMAX.
Oh, I would have been totally fine with it. I would have been very happy.
Yeah. So, since you're editing this week, I think we should move on so you don't, you know, bitch and complain when you have an hour's worth of editing to do, unlike me, who always has 2.5.
I don't like when we give our audience a peek behind the curtain like this. This show isn't edited. It's merely we plug our brains directly into USB cables, and it just winds up on the internet.
The only way this show is edited is that when it's my turn, I edit out all the times I interrupt you, and when it's your turn, you edit out all the times you say, That's about it.
If you want to know who edits, one way to tell, you know, if an episode has been edited by Ian is if it's a 3-hour long episode and I'm dragging out the length, it's because Ian's editing it. But the other is if Ian sounds good in an episode, Ian edited it. If I sound good in an episode,
go fuck yourself.
I edited it. All right.
So what you're saying is I've edited every episode.
Oh.
Yes. Okay. So you always know who's going first, and I never do. Who's going first this week?
Think back to our last episode. What order did we go?
I don't remember who went first last time.
I get to go first. Experience life. Experience wonder. Experience laughter. Experience sound. Experience love. Experience lust. Experience peace.
So, let's talk about what you picked for this week, which I have a lot of things to say about.
I picked the first two episodes of the YouTube Red series Cobra Kai, which is a sequel to the 1984 film The Karate Kid that follows Daniel LaRusso and Johnny... What is Johnny's last name? Johnny Lawrence.
Lawrence, thank you. Yes,
years
yes.
and years after Karate Kid has happened. And I was very surprised that I reacted the way I did to these first two episodes, because I don't know if we've ever talked about our feelings on The Karate Kid. I'm not like a huge fan. I think it's...
Oh, I
know
am.
You are. I think it's... I think there's definitely a nostalgia factor to it. I don't think it's a particularly great movie. I was just rewatching it yesterday. I think I never realized that Pat Morita is incredible in that movie. And, like, it's almost like he's from a different movie. He's so good.
Yes, because Ralph Macchio is not a great actor in that movie. He's, like, a very adorable kid actor.
And the story to that movie is aggressively stupid. but I loved Cobra.
So is, like, The Goonies, though. Like, there's,
like
some...
The Goonies.
Okay, but I'm just saying, like, any, like, so is Gremlins. So is, like, any of those types of movies.
But the difference
like,
between the Goonies and the Gremlins is you have kids going on, like, fantastical adventures. And this one assumes a universe where, like, the bullies of the school are all in a karate dojo together.
Yeah, it's like every 80s movie where the bullies are all really into skiing.
And
like,
so
you just have to...
It's like when every time Daniel's about to get his ass kicked by the Cobra Kai kids, it's like Johnny's go-to move is kicking people in the head and in the gut,
yes.
And it's hilarious to watch. But yes. Anyway, Cobra Kai...
I do really enjoy that, like, as a bully, his first move is a kick.
Yep.
Like, that's not, like, a traditional bully move. Like, it's... Yeah.
And it's basically his... Because I watched Cobra Kai, not having watched Karate Kid in 8 years, maybe 10 years,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And he totally does that in Cobra Kai too, and it's kind of fun.
Yeah.
But and
by the way, so let's just rip the Band-Aid off. I only thought Cobra Kai was like all right.
Oh yeah.
No, I'm kidding. No, it's really, really, really good. I think I've done that to you for the last 3 episodes.
No, I would totally understand if you were like, Cobra Kai's fine.
No. So I like it a lot. I wish I had just rewatched Karate Kid. There's some scenes that like, okay, is the scene where the coach like chokes out Johnny in front of everybody, is that from the original
movie?
That
is the opening scene of Karate Kid 2.
Oh, okay. Okay. That blows me away. Okay, so that was going to be one of my first questions. I don't really know Karate Kid 2 or 3. I kind of remember the Hilary Swank one. But
there was a third one that wasn't the Hilary
Swank
one?
Wait, maybe there wasn't. Maybe it was just 1 and 2 and then Hilary Swank. Maybe I'm adding one.
I don't remember the second one at all. But
I may have never seen the second one. So that was... So I was trying to watch a couple of those scenes because they do some things where they're adding in footage to flashbacks, like the scene where... At the beginning where Johnny falls on the mat after the crane kick and they zoom in on his back, like that's obviously new footage. So I was trying to figure out if they had gotten like lookalikes and things like that for some of these scenes.
Karate Kid 2 opens with, you know, right after the karate championship and the coach is really pissed at Johnny for having come in second. And so he starts to choke out Johnny. And then there's this really goofy scene where Mr. Miyagi saves him. And Mr. Miyagi...
Okay.
Mr. Miyagi, this is, I'm assuming, a setup for the tone of the rest of Karate Kid 2. Mr. Miyagi kind of gets the Cobra Kai sensei to fight him, and so he stands in front of the Cobra Kai sensei's car, and every time the guy tries to punch him, he moves out of the way, so he punches out a window on his own car. And then Mr. Miyagi, like, gets him into a hold and acts like he's gonna, like, break his nose into his brain, you know, like... Looks like he's about to kill him, and the Cobra Kai sensei looks at Mr. Miyagi with such fear in his eyes, like he's about to be killed. And then Mr. Miyagi like honks his nose and walks away. And then Daniel goes, "You could have killed him." And he goes, "Yes, I could have." And then Daniel goes, "Well, why didn't you?" Which is an insane question for Daniel to ask. After the arc he went through in the Karate Kid, and also in general, why didn't you kill this random dude?
Is Elizabeth Shue in the second one?
I don't remember. That's all I watched.
Okay, so I will say one of my favorite, two of my favorite things about the Cobra Kai show, which is extremely, extremely well done. First off, I don't think it looks low budget. I understand what you're saying. Like, I'm sure it is low budget.
It's filmed,
but
very well.
But it doesn't look cheap at all. Like, not even a little bit. And the kind of, like, outdatedness of the way that Johnny and Danny, what's the character's name? What's wrong with me?
Johnny and Daniel. What?
No. Daniel. Yeah, Daniel. Okay, sorry. I said Danny, and I felt like that was wrong.
I think Danny's correct, though, right?
Yeah, no, it definitely is. I'm sorry. That was weird. We can cut that out. The way that Danny and Johnny both look, like... that they don't look like famous actors, that like Danny Zuko looks like he's had a ton of work done and stuff like that. Like, I think that all works within the show. Like, it's really interesting. My two favorite things, I think, from what I've seen, I did only watch the first two. I wanted
Me
to
too.
Watch more.
I've only watched the first two.
I was so okay. But I very lazily didn't want to go upstairs and figure out how to get premium set up on my computer. So I only watched the first two. I really, really like that. Danny sells cars
mm-hmm.
for a living.
And gives out bonsai trees too. Like a loser. Like,
yes, yeah. But, like, not just that he, like, is a car dealer, but, like, that's, like, the car, like, the fact that that's his success and it comes from Mr. Miyagi is, like, kind of cool. And then I also really...
sad, right? Like...
No, no, totally. Yeah, okay. I also really like that Elizabeth Shue's not his wife. Uh-huh. That would have been super eye-rolly if she was. And then I also really, really enjoyed the scene with the douchey Asian kid that's dating his daughter, where he's, like, very, very obviously trying as, like, an Asian culture-loving white man to connect with this kid who has no idea what he's talking about. It's really, really fantastic. Like, the fact that he is unaware that, like, making sushi for your girlfriend's Asian boyfriend as the first time meeting him is, like, kind of a weird thing to do is kind of incredible.
It it goes from him being a little bit like a little bit white-splainy to just like having the rug pulled out from under him, like, oh, you don't eat sushi? Like, but like like getting right up to the line of, but you're Asian, I don't understand.
Yeah, yeah. And then literally saying, like, where are your parents from? And I think he says, like, Reseda or something Irvine. Like that. Yeah,
the whitest place in California.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, anyway, it's a very, very good show. I really, really like the
line. Can I interrupt? I just said Irvine was the whitest place in California. Irvine's pretty Asian, too. I don't know.
I was gonna fight you on that, and I decided that was not a fight worth having. But then I was like, well, if we get into a point where you and I are arguing what the Asian population of a city is, that's like a conversation we don't need to be
always,
getting into.
In my brain, I'm like, Irvine sucks. And then I'm like, well, if it sucks, it must be because of how... It's very Irvine's very Stepford, but it's also very Asian.
Yes. No, Irvine is very Orange County, mm-hmm. and I get what you mean. You're totally right. I really like. I think the thing that impressed me most about this show is how it walks the line of Johnny being lovable and a jackass at the same time. He still is the kid mm-hmm. who was a bully 20 years ago, but I think the entire show is built off of the look he gives his sensei in the original movie when he tells him to sweep the leg. Like I think the entire thing is built off of that one moment where you see Johnny and you're like, oh, Johnny's a dickhead, but he's not evil.
Right.
And
no mistake, like, the show opens on that look, too.
Yeah, yeah. It's really smart that it opens that way. And so, like, he does, like, the scene where the kid is getting picked on, it is bothering him. He's not going to do anything about it. And then his car gets involved and he does something about it. And it does make him feel better to have done it. Like, you can tell it does. But he's not making the right decisions for the right reasons. He's not evil. He's just kind of dumb. Like, then when you get to see the second episode with Johnny or with Danny and he's doing the exact same shit, like, it's kind of beautiful. I don't know. It also makes you realize more. Like, I looked it up afterwards. I guess there's a kind of a fan theory that developed that William Zabka is the hero of the movie a little bit. If you look at it more, like, Danny apparently always initiates the fights physically, like, between him and Johnny. Like, Johnny basically had his girlfriend stolen by Danny, which is true. Like, that's a thing, and they bring that up in the...
I mean,
I
she had broken
I mean,
up with him, and he was harassing
you're right.
her.
Oh, okay. I don't remember the.
I mean, if you
want to
do that,
years,
if you just
but...
want to be completely unfair to women, then sure. They're a thing that can be stolen and traded, you know, like property. But
anyway,
on that note,
but I think like the moment where like he says to him at the car place, like, well, you stole my girlfriend. Like, I could see a 19-year-old or, like, 17-year-old kid, like, feeling that way in the moment. I don't know. It just humanizes Johnny in a lot of ways that I thought were interesting. And kind of...
It on that note, it does a really interesting... The show does a really interesting thing with point of view, where we open on Johnny, who we know to be kind of the, you know, the villain from the film. And
sure.
He's not particularly likable. You know, he's racist and kind of
he's definitely racist and sexist, and I think the show goes out of its way to point
right
that out.
I don't think the show is ever 100% on anyone's side, but what it does is it makes you start to humanize Johnny, like you're saying. You get that he's not evil, he's just like a mess, and he's not completely...
I would say the only person whose show this side is on is Johnny's neighbor, is the kid.
Yes, I would agree.
Like, he's like the hero of the story, if there is a hero of the story. He's the only one who's like he's, you can watch him take the right lessons from Johnny and dispose of the wrong lessons.
Well, it's,
you know,
weird too, because I mean, especially with that initial confrontation, you're plugging this Miguel kid who is very much, I mean, he's Daniel from The Karate Kid. He talks
way too much.
He's kind of a dork. He bumbles his way into trouble.
It.
And you have Johnny getting plugged into the Miyagi part, which is a thing that doesn't totally fit on him, you know?
Right. And it's beautiful. It's so well
and
done.
And he's teaching something that is antithetical to what Miyagi taught, which the second episode gets into it, which is that karate is a defense, but the Cobra Kai way is that you should act first. You know, you shouldn't act second.
Well, can I go back really quickly to something I loved that you just said, which is that Johnny gets plugged into the Mr. Miyagi role, but he's plugged into that role by defending Miguel against a bunch of other high schoolers. Mm-hmm. So then Danny finds out that Johnny beat the shit out of a bunch of kids. And Danny gets really mad, but that's literally what Mr. Miyagi did for Danny. But in the original movie, he beat up a bunch of teenagers.
Right.
So it's like kind of beautiful. The whole thing I think is taking some playful jabs at the original movie in a fun way. I think this show is kind of like a response to the movie. Like, you can tell somebody who really liked the movie and isn't like blinded to the movie's flaws wrote this.
Yes.
You know?
And what I was saying earlier with point of view is, so I mean, you kind of appreciate Johnny as a person, and so by the time you meet Daniel, which is fairly late in the first episode, you know you're supposed to like him because he's the hero of the Karate Kid, but you know, if he were just some random guy walking into a movie, you'd hate his guts, you know? He's the worst.
And all of the things that made him likable are gone because he's not poor anymore. He's not an underdog anymore. His family are all kind of bratty. Like,
yeah.
His daughter's doing some stupid shit. His son's being kind of a jackass. And he's upset that his children
aren't impressed by the country club that they're members of.
It's
kind of interesting. It's also interesting.
And he is upset for the right reasons. Like, he is like, well, I didn't have this shit, and I'm trying to give them the best. But he, like, you can tell that he is still, like, a down-to-earth person on the inside or whatever. But he, yeah, it's, I don't know. Like, I think the show casts his wife as, like, a very obvious trophy wife, too. Like, I'm not saying she's, like, not a nice person. We haven't seen enough of her to make a decision one way or another in the first two episodes. But I think we are supposed to get that impression that he, you know, married this super beautiful model type woman and then had a couple of kids and bought a bunch of houses. I don't know. It's interesting.
And it's interesting, too, because class was such an important thing in the
totally.
First movie, and in this
totally.
One we've learned that Daniel has carved out a pretty successful life for himself, and Johnny we learn in the first episode as a kid was basically funded by a wealthy stepdad who he's shunned, and so Johnny's dirt poor now and is doing maintenance work,
who is played by Ed fucking Asner. That was bizarre.
That was the weirdest
little cameo, especially because Ed Asner is at a point. I love Ed Asner, for the record. I think he's an incredible actor. I think he's an incredible voice actor, but he is at the point in his aging process where he kind of just naturally looks evil. Like, there's something very, very foreboding about his appearance. I don't know. I do want to say I said this kind of already, but the daughter being kind of tied into this new generation of bad kids, that it's Danny's daughter that's tied into them, I think is kind of fun. That it's like that, because it does position, I feel like this does some of the same things that I always loved about Dr. Horrible's sing-along blog, which is to use perspective to switch the antagonist and protagonist roles in some fun ways.
Well, there's an interesting thing too with the Miguel character, the you know, the next door neighbor who's the Daniel role in Cobra Kai.
Yes.
I don't know if the show will go there. I don't know. I've only watched 2 of the 10 episodes, but you know, he's this antisocial nerd who you know is sad because he's motivated because He doesn't have a social place. He's getting his ass kicked. You know, he can't talk to the girl, you know, that kind of shit.
Mm-hmm.
And he's learning from, you know, kind of this like toxic mess, that what's important right. is, you know, attacking first. And he's like basically being taught, you know, like what could easily slide into like nasty MRA shit, if that makes sense.
Sure. And I feel like there's a moment in the second episode where you're supposed to worry yeah. about that, because there is a moment where he's showing the kid how to punch, and the kid isn't doing it right, and so he says picture your enemy, and so he pictures the boyfriend of Danny's daughter who he has a crush on, and just starts screaming as he starts punching the thing, which is I don't think that's supposed to inspire us to feel like this is a beautiful thing that Johnny's doing. I think we're supposed to worry about this kid.
I agree. I think, like you were saying, yeah. you're 100. The show is very gentle in the way it makes fun of the Miguel character. And there's,
yes.
I think you are supposed to 100% be on Miguel's side.
Yes.
In that you're rooting for his well-being. There's a moment, yes. I think it's in the first episode, where...
Well, he's also the only character who points out Johnny's yes. shit. Like he very, and in a way that is like supposed to also be a joke, because it's a very millennial thing to do. Like every time Johnny tells him to stop being a pussy and start being like a dick,
oh my
or
God.
Whatever, he says like, well, you're doing a lot of genderizing right now, or he'll, you know, he says like a lot of that kind of stuff where you're like, oh, this is like an engaged person in the world who's trying to learn from someone who's kind of a jackass in some way.
There's the moment that had me 100% over on the show.
Uh-huh.
It was at the very end of the first, episode where Johnny's decided to reopen Cobra Kai. He has a monologue, and it's positioned as this really triumphant kind of monologue where, you know, he's pulling out the headband again. And, you know, it's like, it's framed as though Johnny is accepting his destiny, you know, but
mm-hmm.
his monologue is he's lecturing Miguel, and he's talking about, you know, I'm going to bring back the type of fighting your pussy generation desperately needs. It's an actual
yes.
line from that monologue. And I was dying because it's such a stupid thing to say. But he 100% means it. And the show is giving
yes.
him his moment while also pointing out how absolutely absurd that is, you know?
Yes. Yes. I have complicated feelings about using that scene from Karate Kid 2, apparently, though, because I mean, I get it. Like, he's the son of an abusive, like, patriarch figure, and but after seeing that scene, I'm like, well, why would you start Cobra Kai and call it all the same shit? Like, you can tell in that scene that he's unhappy with the way his sensei carried himself and acted in the world. I don't know.
Maybe the show
will
go there.
Yeah, that's true.
Because
that
I think
true.
Also
it probably
his glory
will.
Days are tied to Cobra Kai. You know, I would imagine
yeah, that's true.
It's very empowering for him to take the helm of Cobra Kai.
Yes.
What I was going to say is there's an exchange between Miguel and Johnny in the second episode that made me laugh, where Miguel... you know, he's training Miguel. He goes, from now on, you only refer to me as sensei. And, you know, he's telling Miguel, you need to have the balls. And Miguel goes, don't you think you're doing a lot of genderizing? And then Johnny looks at him just really confused and goes, what? And he goes, sorry, don't you think you're doing a lot of genderizing, sensei?
I enjoyed that. I also enjoyed, like, 10 minutes later where he's having an interaction with Johnny and he's clearly saying the word sensei at the end of every sentence. And then Johnny goes, you don't have to do it every time. And he goes, sorry, sensei. I mean, sorry.
But then, and then 2 seconds later, Johnny gets tired of the conversation and snaps it back into the sensei-pupil dynamic.
Right, right.
And I'm very curious to see what Daniel's role is going to be in the show, you know.
I mean, the whole second episode is about him. I think it's going to be a, you know, this is War of the Roses with Danny and Johnny. That's what it seems
yeah.
like.
Yeah, and I'm assuming it'll coalesce in a big karate tournament showdown, you know.
Yeah. I by the way, I thought the fight scene in the pilot was
yeah,
great.
I did too.
Like, that's what I mean. They, like, the world of the show is small, so that's why it has a low budget.
That's what I mean. I mean,
but it doesn't feel, but it feels... it feels right that it's small in that way. Like, you don't watch Danny and say, like, oh, I don't believe he's rich. He lives in a mansion and it looks like a mansion. Like, they do a good job with
all
that.
What I'm saying is clearly there's a limited number of shooting locations. They don't have...
I mean, I agree with you, but I didn't think that once while I was watching
the show. It's very clearly handled by capable directors, you know, who know what they're doing. I really like this.
By the way,
I'm very surprised.
Also, go fuck yourself, because now I have to go get fucking YouTube bread or whatever. I hate you.
I think it's free for a month.
I mean, I could just do that. Just get it for a month and then cancel it and watch the whole thing. But it's definitely worth checking out. If you have any connection to Karate Kid in your life, I think you will enjoy it. I do want to say I don't remember the original movie as well as I'd like. So if Johnny was like a total psycho in the original movie and like harassed Elizabeth Shue, I don't remember that. So me defending him just now was not a defense of those actions. I'm just putting that out into the world.
I was giving you a hard time. I mean, Johnny's the worst, but it's very clear that he's being coached by someone who's absolutely a psychopath. Probably maybe like a little bit maybe struggling with PTSD from wartime.
Is that a suggestion in that movie?
I mean,
is he a soldier? Is he an ex-soldier? Is that like part of his character? Oh my god, I think I gotta go back and rewatch these. I really, really love the original. I remember really loving the Hilary Swank one. Now maybe I just need to watch the movies again.
All I remember from
Miyagi's in the Hilary Swank one too, right?
He's the only one in the Hilary Swank one.
Yeah. Is there, so do we have not found out, or we don't know how Mr. Miyagi passed. We just know that he's no longer around, right?
And I mean, because Pat Morita has passed, and you're not going to recast
Miyagi. No, of course. I'm curious, like, if they're going to talk about that in the show. If they're going to talk, like, if there's going to be a monologue that Danny has about what happened with his friend, you know? Like, that kind of thing is very interesting to me. I do like also, though, that it doesn't feel like I wouldn't be surprised if the show didn't do that. Like, it isn't really a fan service thing. It feels like a self-contained separate new thing.
I picked this because I mentioned this briefly in our last episode. I have a complicated relationship with nostalgia, as it is in our
pop culture. You do much more than me.
Which is that, like,
by the way, I would put that
I
out there.
I shake my head at it constantly, even though I'm probably equally susceptible to it.
Sure.
But my frustration with it is, like, are we, to borrow an idea from South Park, it's like, are we just eating member berries? Like, are we just sitting around saying, remember when this, remember when that?
Well, sometimes we are. I would say you and I both would probably agree that's not what this show is.
No, and that's what's so interesting. It is very much...
Yeah. Like, even really a little bit. I mean, like, we're talking a lot about the flashbacks. I think there's three flashbacks total. They're all in the pilot, and we've talked about all of them already. And they're the only flashbacks that would matter to a show about this. Oh. So, like, it's all necessary.
It's a rehash of the Karate Kid's plot, too. But also...
Yeah.
It does a very crucial thing in that it's asking the question, okay, if we're revisiting this, why are we revisiting this? What is interesting about visiting Johnny and Daniel, you know, decades later? And it's positing that, you know, they kind of suck. You know, this is what happens, you know, it's interesting.
Does Danny suck?
I think he does a little bit, right?
Why? I mean, he's dumb. But like, what? He's succeeded in a way that like hasn't asked him to grow a lot. I think that's true. He is going after Johnny because he believes that Johnny is a sincerely bad guy, and he has evidence for that. Like, he doesn't know that his daughter hit Johnny's car, and Johnny doesn't tell him. He offers to fix Johnny's car for
free, and
it doesn't.
You don't think that's a power move?
It is a little bit, but it also is a...
We meet Danny, and his whole shtick is being... I mean, he's...
I think he's a dumbass. I think he and Johnny are similar. I guess you're right. I guess they both
suck. So, like, with Danny, we meet him. He's built a persona around being the Karate Kid. He's karate chopping prices. He's handing out...
Right.
The bonsai tree was an important thing in the Karate Kid. It was, like, a thing that Miyagi taught him... about
right,
discipline.
But does that? Yeah, but then, you're right. I was, but I mean, like, okay, so, but like, I'm... if you watch a wait. But if really quick, sorry. Like, what about football players who do that? Like, do we think they suck, or is it just because like Mr. Miyagi taught him something special and different, and that's and he's using it this way?
But then, so he offers he offers to fix Johnny's car, which I think is a power move. But then immediately afterwards, we meet his coworkers at the car dealership, who all know about Johnny, because Danny cannot get out of that moment, and he cannot, like, he cannot move past his stupid ass rivalry with Johnny. Like, it's who he is, you know, it's who both of them are. So like, you know, if his coworkers and his wife are like, all know who Johnny is by reputation because Daniel has told them about it, like, that's sad. That's pathetic, you know?
Yes, you're right. You're right. But that's what I mean. Sad, sad is not the same thing as bad.
Someone can suck because they're pathetic, though, you know?
Yeah, I guess. I guess. I just, I haven't seen Johnny, I haven't seen Johnny or Danny do anything yet where I'm like, you're anything other than just kind of eye rolling. Like, they're idiots. I mean, but I don't think they're like,
Daniel hasn't like randomly pointed at you know, Hispanic kids and called them illegals. So
yeah, you're right. I forgot that Johnny did that. That definitely happened. Yeah, I don't know. It's, oh, I just hit the table. We're gonna have to edit that out.
God damn it.
Yeah, I should just do that more, give you more work to do.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
All right. Is there anything else you wanted to say about Cobra Kai?
Yeah, we're good. Let's move on.
I strongly recommend it. I, you know, you get that feeling in your head sometimes when you're watching a show where, like, you're not really, it just is pure fun. Like, you just want to keep going and you're not having problems with anything and you're, like, really happy and surprised. And this show felt like that. It just felt good from the start. I can't recommend it highly enough. I really, really enjoyed myself.
Those episodes do go down pretty easy, the first two.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. I, you know what it felt like to me? It felt like American Vandal, in the sense of surprise at how nuanced and intricate the thing I was watching was versus what I was expecting to sit down and enjoy.
Huh. That's interesting.
Because both of those, you pitch them to somebody and you're not going to get a good idea of what it feels like until you actually watch it yourself. Because the thing, like, if you tell someone you're watching a fake documentary about a guy painting dicks on cars, like, you're not going to get what American Vandal is, you know? And that's how I felt about Cobra Kai as well.
Yep. I get what you're saying, and I agree.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I think that's all I had to say about it. Thank you for the pick for this time.
Ian?
Are we going to move on?
No, I think we're running kind of long on time. Do you want to just call
yeah,
it?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Uh-huh. Bobby, what did you think of GLOW?
My thing is better than your thing.
So, first off, this is my, I think this is my favorite Netflix show right now.
Oh, okay.
It's, I don't think there's a Netflix original that I'm enjoying more than the show. I really, really like it. I was never, were you into wrestling back in the day?
Yes.
Were you really? Uh-huh. Okay, I never was super into wrestling. I had like, I think I had like a Hulk Hogan sleeping bag, and I watched it sometimes at friends' houses. I mean, I got the concept, and that's all you really need for the show. But, well, let's, okay. What did you think of GLOW? What do you have to say about GLOW? Why don't you just start, and we'll take it from there.
I really liked GLOW a lot.
it's so good, right?
Yeah. I think that this is like a really great performance from Alison Brie, who I've,
oh my god, she's incredible in the show,
been a fan of forever, and I'm Me glad too. That she kind of has like this really great starring role in a show.
Do you want to briefly explain what the show is? And
yeah, okay, so as far as the pilot goes, the show, in the pilot, I don't know if this changes later, focuses on Alison Brie's character, who
the show the first season at least is entirely about her and her friend.
Yes.
I mean, that's everybody else. Like, it does. The show follows a very similar format to Orange is the New Black, which is you have these two main characters and then a bunch of really interesting secondary characters who are obviously going to take more of the center stage as the show goes on. That's kind of the basic idea. I will say that accepting the interesting politics of Orange is the New Black, I think this is a better show, pound for pound, from what has been made so far. I think the first season of this show is better than the first season of Orange is the New Black. It's the same creator. That's
it
why
is
I'm comparing
not
the two.
The same creator.
It's not. It's wait. No, this Jenji Cohen.
It is created by Liz Flahive and Carly Mensch. Jenji Cohen is an executive producer on the show.
Oh, okay. Well, that you can forgive my my mistake there because it feels
shit.
I just
saw this will get you excited. I don't know who any of these people are. Oh, actually, maybe this isn't super exciting. Because I just Googled Liz Flahive and Carly Mensch right now to see what they don't have Wikipedia pages about. And so I IMDb'd them, and they were both writers on the Captain Marvel screenplay. But
oh, interesting.
Which is great.
No, that's kind of cool.
Then also there are like 9 writers on the Captain Marvel screenplay.
right. Well, I will say I think you would understand why I would assume that Jenji Cohen had more specific involvement in this, because it does feel like a Jenji Cohen show, I think.
A little bit.
Okay.
I don't.
Are you not?
Because.
Well, go. So, yeah. So, talk about it. So, just go ahead.
The thing, Jenji Cohen did Weeds, right?
Yes.
The main difference is, I think. Oh, you actually convey this to me from, via what your roommate said, is that Jenji Cohen loves women in crisis.
Yes, that is true.
I didn't even realize I was about to say that. But Weeds and, Orange is the New Black kind of throw some good-natured, you know, like, suburbanite into a very uncomfortable foreign environment and, like,
that's true.
Has them spinning
right.
out. And the Alison Brie character isn't, from the beginning, in a comfortable environment. She's
an
aspiring actor in, and she's going to auditions, and she's not particularly successful. Her best friend is a former soap opera actor who has recently had a child and is no longer acting. And so, like, neither of them is particularly successful.
Right.
The Alison Brie character goes to an audition. She isn't sure what the audition's for, and it ends up being for GLOW, which is the Gorgeous Ladies of Wrestling. And the first episode is kind of... like the within GLOW, these people are kind of trying to find everyone's trying to kind of find the dynamic between like performance and you know, like
in reality,
like what wrestling is.
Yeah.
And it all culminates
right.
to this wonderful scene where where you find out that the Alison Brie character has been sleeping with her best friend's husband, and her friend, played by Betty Gilpin, confronts her in the wrestling ring, and
her friend and you know, Alison Brie is like kind of mousy. Her friend is like the traditional idea of a movie star.
Yes.
Like, she's blonde, she's beautiful, she's, you know, like kind of a little bit of a diva. Like, she's all of these things. And Marc Maron, who is running GLOW, wants her. Like, he, you know. Actually, I'm sorry. That hasn't happened yet. Sorry. Continue. I will shut up now.
No, I watched the second episode too, so I know that ends up happening. But yeah, and so they confront each other in the wrestling ring, and it's just this perfect culmination of drama and kind of spectacle that wrestling is, and the Marc Maron character,
right.
who's kind of this. He's kind of an interesting character in that he's. You know, kind of like your shallow casting
director.
He's
kind of a lovable malaprop.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, he's like a really shitty guy who you can't help but kind of love anyway.
has this.
He's kind of Mark. He's basically Marc Maron, actually.
Yeah. Yeah. He's perfectly cast. And he has this, he has this vision of GLOW actually working. And he sees the two of them in costume, you know, wrestling each other. And it's really great.
I love that moment because I think the reason I decided to do this one is I rewatched it recently. I rewatched the series a couple of weeks ago, and I think I texted you at the time. The pilot of that show is the most perfect kind of mission statement for a series that I've ever seen, because what this first season at least really is about faces and heels, right? You have villains and heroes in wrestling, mm-hmm. people that you love and people that you love to hate. And Allison Brie is going to be the heel mm-hmm. of the series. She's going to be the lovable villain. And she is that in and outside of the ring, in and outside of the story. She's kind of a shitty person. She very obviously, if you step back for half a second, has this friend who's much more successful than her and has a family. She's clearly jealous of that. And she, you know, does this shitty thing and then has to, you know, she sticks around. She isn't, you know, normally when somebody sleeps with somebody in a TV show, that's the bad guy, right? Mm-hmm. But she's our main character.
And it walks and you, so we have to, it walks you into that, and you come to the revelation that she,
yeah, about halfway through the episode, once you're already really rooting for her.
Is bailing her out of, like, a really terrible day. And it hits. You're like, oh, no, why would you do that?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah, it's and we've already seen her sleep with a husband. We've already seen her become friends with this or be friends with a friend. We just don't know that those are related to mm-hmm. each other. It's great. Well, let's talk about the second one too, if you watched it.
Yeah.
So I mean, the show is really just about them. The first season is about them like getting their series off the ground. So we have all these other interesting side characters, all of whom are great. Mm-hmm.
My favorite side character moment is when the friend character shows up with Marc Maron. One of the side characters is this just weird kind of eccentric goth chick.
Are you talking about Sheila, the wolf girl?
Yeah, she hands instead of a headshot in the first episode, she hands the Marc Maron character a crumpled up photo of a crumpled up print of a wolf.
Yes.
And so when the friend comes, Allison Brie is just kind of leaning against against the ropes on the outside of the ring, and then Sheila sticks her head through the ropes, goes submit, 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 and she goes what? She goes, no, she's the alpha. You're the beta. You need to submit. Get low. Bow your head. And so Allison Brie just starts doing what she's saying. And so she's bowing her head, so she's lower than her friend. And her friend walks over and goes, what are you doing? Like, it's so funny.
I really enjoy the scene with the, I think she's Samoan. The mm-hmm. I forget. What's the character's name? You've watched it more recently than me.
The one who's from like a wrestling dynasty, right?
Yes, yeah. When I love when Allison Brie convinces her that they need character backstory for their
which
practice.
Sounds like a great idea.
And so it sounds like a great idea from an actress, and of course this other girl who has no experience is going to follow her. And Allison Brie just very painfully starts doing like Shakespearean drama in the middle of this wrestling ring while Marc Maron is looking at her.
The show makes you think for a second that this is going to be a really good thing, you know, like, oh yes, yeah, yes. This is exactly what they need. They need to up the drama. But then she just starts talking about like intricate, like dynastic kind of backstabbing that makes no sense. And then right. she doesn't stop and they don't get to the fighting. And it's so good.
No, it's incredible. I think one of the best moments in the pilot is when Marc Maron is interviewing her for the job and he looks at her and says, are you hot? Because I can't tell. You have one of those faces that kind of changes. And I don't think that's true, by the way. I think Allison Brie is beautiful, but they do a very good job in the show of making her, like, kind of gross.
They do
or something.
Something
I don't,
because Allison Brie is yeah. gorgeous.
No, she's absolutely stunning, but they do such a good job of making her, like, she's this little worm
yeah.
that you don't want to pay attention to. Like, she's so painful to watch sometimes. Yeah. You're watching her self-destruct. But also, as the show goes on, her friend, who is the hero, like, the show does this really funny thing where she is also an asshole because she just gets to be this, like, white privileged diva in the show who doesn't really have to do anything and everybody else, like, works their asses off. So she's the star and she's the hero, but she also is kind of the villain. Like, it's actually a little similar to Cobra Kai, I would say. Like, it's an interesting dynamic between the two. It's playing around with hero and villain in a lot of ways.
I actually thought of that, too.
Yeah.
I think these were actually accidentally very well chosen companions for each
other. And the show does all the right things. Like, there's an episode 3 later where we find out, this is very minor, but we find out that, like, this isn't Sheila's wrestling persona. She dresses like this because it makes her feel better about herself. Like, she thinks of herself as a wolf. And, like, there's this really, like, kind of beautiful moment with the rest of the team about that. And everybody gets a moment to shine. We get plenty of Cherry, who's one of the greatest characters in the series. We get plenty of, this weird, quiet punk girl that we meet in the pilot. There's lots of really, really fun stuff with these secondary characters, and it's a great ensemble show. It's just really, really well done.
There's a really interesting culmination of things in the second episode where you find out, it's sort of vague, you find out one of the characters has history with the Marc Maron character of some sort.
Yes.
And that she also had a miscarriage. And, yes.
Oh, shit, that all happened in the second episode. Yes. Yeah. Okay.
And, yes. Mark, and then, so it sets up tension between this character and another character. Anyway,
Cherry Bang and Melrose, if you want names, but yeah.
And it's too much to talk about everything that's set up, but what ends up happening at the very end is the Marc Maron character, in trying to pitch, the dramatic flair that he's going for.
Right.
Stages a scene in which Alison Brie's character kicks another character in the stomach to stage a miscarriage. It's all staged, it's all fake. But
this is all in front of a woman who now everyone in the room knows has had a miscarriage.
Right.
And is like, yeah, like it's and that information has just come out, and it's very, very painful.
And he's reveling in this, and you think like he has gone too far, and then that episode ends with a slow close-up on Alison Brie's friend who's still deciding whether or not she wants to be a part of GLOW, and she smiles because she understands kind of what the dynamic of GLOW is going to be, and she understands how viciously evil her friend is going to be in this, and it's interesting. It's a really good
that's one of those moments where the Marc Maron is sacrificing Cherry for his white star.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's exactly what's happening there. And that keeps happening throughout the show. And she's unaware of it, so it doesn't make her a bad person, but it makes her kind of an unlikable person, even though she, it's interesting.
Yeah.
But then he also does go outside and offer her double salary because he needs her to run the show as well. So, like, the show, they're doing things for the public that are shitty and racist, and Marc Maron is like... Marc Maron's interesting because he's this kind of schlocky B-horror movie director who also isn't a bad person. So he has, like, I think his biggest fatal flaw is he has this, like, separation in his head between violence and stuff like that in the ring and, like, real-world shit. He doesn't see how those things can connect or be related to each other. He pushes a lot of these women to start engaging in, racial stereotypes and things like that. And the whole time he's saying, like, well, he's using this, like, very kind of cheesy, fake, hacky, like, reverse psychology to say why that's actually a good thing. And he's forcing people to face their racism and all this stuff. But I do think he believes that. I just don't think it's true. I don't know. It's interesting. He becomes fascinating to me on the show.
Marc Maron's a perfect guy to play that part too, just because it's I don't know, this is gonna sound awful, but it's like Marc Maron as a persona is sort of interesting in that, like, I have to, like, remind myself, like, sometimes my brain will subconsciously start assuming that something bad has come out about Marc Maron that makes me think I'm not supposed to like him.
Right.
And then I have to remind myself, Marc Maron's fine,
Marc Maron does feel like he should have already been part of the Me Too movement. But I think that's because Marc Maron is so self-hating that he talks about himself
as
such a shitty
person. Exactly it.
Like Marc Maron, my favorite Marc Maron joke of all time, and this is, and it's just because it's perfectly encapsulating of Marc Maron, is that, I'm gonna paraphrase it. This isn't exactly it, but he says, like, Well, you have to make sure that you can make them cry, because you don't really know if somebody loves you until you can make them cry because of something you said. And like Annie's kid, but that's like such a fucked up, crazy thing to say. But it's really, if you dissect that joke, it's a joke about how fucked up he is, right? It's not a joke about how like anything else. I don't know. He's like a self-aware problematic person, and so somehow he circumvented all that.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's interesting. I mean, he also just isn't, like, an abuser, to be clear. That's, like, a separate thing.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I don't know. He's great. It's great. The show is fantastic. I love the show. It's totally undeniably good, I think.
Yeah. This is the only show that you've picked that I immediately watched another episode that you didn't see.
Yeah, I'm so excited. You need to watch the whole show. It's a really fantastic first season, and the second season is coming out soon, and I can't wait.
I was, just before we did the show, I was watching the documentary on Glow, and that was kind of interesting.
I started to watch it. I haven't watched much of it. It is fascinating. It seems like the original show was even more crazy and fucked up than this series is purporting it to be.
Mm-hmm.
Have you met Bash yet?
Who's Bash?
Okay, no, so probably not.
Bash is from Veronica Mars.
Yes, yes. He's great. He shows up in the third episode, I believe, and he's a really, really fun character as well. Bash is their kind of clueless, rich boy benefactor. Yeah, it's great. It's a really good show.
It's fun. There's a Mad Men reunion in the first episode.
There is, yeah.
Allison Rich Summer.
And Rich Summer, yeah. Rich Summer is really good. Rich Summer is very, very good at playing... closet asshole. Mm-hmm. and he gets to shine in that role a lot in the show. I also, by the way, I will say, for whatever reason, there's like a ton of nudity and sex in the pilot.
Yeah,
there's like none in the rest of the
it's
series.
Weird too,
I don't know,
because it's not necessary either.
No, it's not at all. It feels very strange. It also feels
well,
like
the first,
I don't necessarily have a problem with it, by the way. I think it's interesting. I think the scene where she's changing and Allison Brie is topless is definitely unnecessary.
Yeah.
I think the sex scene between her and Rich Summer is interesting.
The sex scene itself is interesting, and you can say the nudity is sort of, like, incidental to the
right,
sex scene,
right.
But it's also not, it's still not necessarily necessary, if you know what I mean.
But it is just a weird thing, because it feels, you know what it feels like? It feels like when you rewatch the pilot of Breaking Bad, and there's tits in it. Like it just feels like, oh yeah, they didn't know what the show was. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like it's not a necessary thing to do in that show. It just felt funny. I only say that because, you know, sometimes people are turned off by that kind of thing. And if you watch the pilot and don't like that, there's literally never nudity in the rest of the show.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's all I have to say. So you liked Glow, huh?
I did. I liked it
good.
Quite a bit.
Yeah. I was very confident about this one, I will say.
Well, then I hated it. And you
all right, well, so that is our time. Of course, since you're editing, we kept it at under an hour 15. What are we doing next week, Bobby?
So I was actually going to choose something else, but Matt Groening said a bunch of stupid stuff this week, and so I changed my mind. I'm going to give you Hari Kondabalu's The Problem with Apu.
Oh, okay. Okay. I was so confused for a second. Great. I've been wanting to watch that for a long time, actually.
Yeah, it's really interesting. It's a documentary about Apu from The Simpsons, Apu Nahasapima Petalon, and it's about his effect on, you know, Indian Americans.
Right.
I'm
fascinated. I'm fascinated to see it just because I feel like when that show started, that was already on its way out as a portrayal, and it's been like what 25 years now, and it's just a very strange aspect of culture that we're like more focused on continuity than good taste. So I'm very interested to watch it.
It's sort of interesting, like, you hear our parents talk about, like, Sambos and stuff,
right,
you know, and
right.
You're like, wow, how could that have ever happened?
Right.
But, you know, you go to Universal Studios and Hank Azaria does, like, an Indian voice at you while you're waiting in line. It's
right.
Weird.
But that's still a fun ride.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Back to the Future was more fun, though, right?
Oh, yeah. I forgot that's what it replaced. Yes. I like I like any of the rides where there's a story while you're in the line. I'm a sucker for that.
Yeah, the line is really cool.
Yeah.
It's also kind of interesting, this choice, because, you know, obviously Apu is sort of, we're kind of reckoning with Apu right now.
Right, right.
And it's getting more, people are getting more defensive about it than I thought they would. And Hari Kondabalu's kind of like the, he's kind of a, like a lightning rod of criticism right now,
yes.
Which I think is completely and totally undeserved.
Right.
And so, I don't know. It'll be interesting to talk about.
I feel like I'm watching a lot of Sopranos right now, and I feel like there is this thing in human nature that we see a lot on that show, which is anytime somebody is told, like, hey, maybe this is bad for you, Tony screams, fuck you, and walks out of the therapist's office. And and I feel like that is exactly what this counter reaction to this documentary is. I mean, I haven't even seen it yet, but I'm basing this off of just what I picture as the people who are very, very defensive of Apu as a character.
It's crazy to me that, and my impression of, perhaps unfairly, of Simpsons writers isn't that they're like, you know, crotchety.
Right. You know, I think I think of Conan O'Brien. Like, I think of a room full of Conan O'Brien-esque people.
Right. And I feel like the only person out of the Simpsons crew who has responded to, you know, this Apu reckoning correctly has been Hank Azaria.
Right.
Who just, I mean, all it took was reciting a line he probably memorized and sounding sincere at the same time.
I mean, you're right. But also, like, I feel like he recognizes more than Matt Groening, his, like, life is in danger. I mean, not life, but you know what I mean. Like, credibility is in danger if he goes the wrong way with this. Like, that's a career-defining moment for him. So I think he's in a hard position. Like, I don't envy that. The way he has to handle that. Like, Hank Azaria didn't write Apu, you know? Like, he's just a guy who, I don't know. It's interesting.
It is very interesting. We'll talk about
it. Yeah, sorry. We just went on for like 5 minutes about that. So
well, now that we've talked about Apu,
I'm
gonna change my pick too.
Well, so for next time, I'm doing something I'm very excited about that I talked about on this very podcast already, which is the movie Blockers, starring Leslie Mann, Ike Barinholtz, and John Cena, who is I guess I like John Cena, but he's very, very funny in it. All three of them are amazing. I'm super excited for you to watch it. I think it's going to blow you away as a movie.
Yeah, I know that movie because you keep stalking that one girl on Twitter.
Oh my God. So. For the record, before we turn on the podcast one day, I had tweeted about the movie, and one of the teenage girls in the movie that I really enjoyed retweeted it or liked it or something. And I told Bobby about that, and I said that it made me feel creepy to be excited about that because I'm pretty sure she's 17. But it was still cool, and she's very funny in it. And I guarantee you, after the movie, you're going to be like, yeah, she's the breakout star of the movie. Yeah, she's awesome.
Totally. And, yeah. And age is just a number.
So. Oh, my God. I hate you so much. Well, on that note.
You're wrong.
Oh, my God. Bye.
You're wrong.